My aunt's little ones are doing a 9-week course. And I mean, I know they're really OLIC and stuff, but I just think it's kind of cruel. Because when she says sit, they sit. When she says come, they come. And now, she's teaching them tricks, like party tricks and stuff. I mean, it's exploitation. Come on, I mean, the poor dogs.
A combination meal, inspired by seven colors, is something for everyone. Nando's, fire it up.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Luckily for us, Deshni Subramani's here, and she is with the Mail and Guardian content producing there. And
You used to be.
What are you up to at the moment?
I'm freelancing at the moment. I'm actually producing for The Big Debate right now.
I like freelancing.
Yeah.
You're in charge of your own destiny.
Yeah.
So when did you stop with the Mail and Guardian? I didn't know that.
Maybe about 4 years ago.
God, that's old news then.
I've moved on to a lot of places. I've been at Business Day, Financial Mail.
Sorry, I'm so out of date.
It's okay. It's okay. I mean, my last event was not so eventful. I was at Huffington Post, news editor.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, best leave that in the background.
On.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good sense.
Is that a news publication, or is that what Donald Trump would call fake news?
Well, he would call it fake news and a whole lot more.
So, Deshni, with The Big Debate, I mean, that's a hell of a fun show to produce because there's often lots of fire and brimstone in that show, right?
It's a great show to produce. It's really interesting just to see people, how much they love you when you want them on the show. And then afterwards, you know, they just disappear on you. I'm sure you've experienced that a lot. You know, they just like, poof.
You message them or you phone them and then they don't want to answer.
The WhatsApp doesn't even get delivered. What? Who are you again? Sorry, I don't know.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it's interesting. It's been great so far. I don't know if you've watched any of the shows. We've done 2 last year and we're continuing this year. The next one's on the 17th of Feb.
Okay, have you got it all sorted out? Is it recorded already?
No, we're doing it live. It's live.
What's it going to be?
I can't tell you yet.
Oh. Tell us about the 2 that you put on in December.
We did State Capture and we did Radical Economic Transformation. So we basically did it ahead of the ANC conference, that non-event that you were talking about.
Yes.
And it was basically to look at these 2 big themes that were coming out of, you know, the ANC presidential race. It was great. Look, it was lit, I won't lie. The first one was a bit hectic, but the second one was a little bit even-tempered, and I think it was a lot more theory to deal with, so it actually worked out quite well.
Isn't it difficult when you're producing a TV show to not fall into the trap of trying to do sensational, I'm going to shout at you, you're going to shout at me TV, when you actually, especially with a show like that, have an opportunity to educate people and to hear both sides of the story and to give maybe a lot of South Africans who wouldn't be able to hear an articulate debate about this a chance to hear some very valid viewpoints from both sides. And sometimes there are 3 or 4 sides to a story. But it is tempting to want to make people fight, right?
That's the best part about it, is that we keep, every time we have editorial meetings, we have to keep going back, guys, but are we going to have a debate or are we going to have a fight? Mm. Is it going to be a conversation or is it going to be a debate? So that you also run the risk of having people just agree with each other, which we don't want. We want people to actually pull out the different sides and just get into the, you know, nitty-gritty of it. But, I mean, it just goes back to the name, so we just focus on that and we try to keep it moving.
Sure. Mm. All right, well, we wanted to talk to you and get you in here this morning for the Burning Platform, because you have been covering news stories for some time, and I thought that over the period of this last couple of months, I was being very sarcastic about nothing's happened, but actually a huge amount has happened.
Yep.
And they always try to sneak in something that should take up front page news and be everyone's most pressing thought for that week, but they do it in a week where most people are either drunk or tired or at home
just
or not.
Just asleep.
Or even sleeping or not even paying attention to the news, right?
There's a running joke in journalism circles that if the president's out the country, be on standby, because he always makes massive announcements when he's not in the country. Right. I don't know if anyone's noticed.
Yeah.
He goes to like France and then he announces, okay, cabinet reshuffle happening. Something,
so he doesn't have to deal with the fallout at home, right?
Yeah. And I think, it's a lot to do with, personally, I just think it shows that he may feel a little bit isolated in some of the decisions he makes. I mean, I don't know.
Well, recently you would be right to think that. It seems like everybody's considering him yesterday's news.
Mm.
And now he's this lame duck president who's sitting there with nothing to do. Not that he's been doing a lot of presidenting, to be fair.
The honest truth is that President Zuma is not a lame duck president. He has extreme power, and this is the problem right now. I don't know if you've been listening to other people explain about the two centers of power within the ANC and the state. So we've got an ANC president who is Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the main head of the leading party, and we've got a president who is not the head of the leading party. And the last time this happened, what happened? 2009, Polokwane.
Recall.
There was a recall of Thabo Mbeki. So there's a lot of speculation about the fact that this is going to happen, and I think, you know, the ANC, NEC, I don't know if you read some news stories yesterday, but News 24 reported that four sources within the NEC, the highest body of the ANC, has said that, you know, Zuma's time is up. It's a matter of when now.
But then Ace Magashule yesterday, I saw him in the news saying, no, there are no two centers. There's only one center of power. That center of power is the ANC. And don't panic. This is all media speculation. It's people like you, Deshni, spreading around rumors.
But what does that mean? It's only the ANC. So does that mean that Ramaphosa is then the center of power?
Listen,
what does he mean?
I mean, first and foremost, when Ace opens his mouth, you need to put on a whole lot of filters because you know mostly lies are going to tumble out. But let's give him benefit of the doubt for a moment, just if it needs some exploration. He is the new Secretary General. He doesn't want to start, we would assume, on lies. And maybe he's trying to figure out what that center, if he believes there's only one, maybe take him at his word. In that case, is it Cyril or is it Getlitlikiza in the union buildings?
I mean, so the Secretary General is one of the most powerful people in the ANC. And he is obviously towing the same line that everyone else is. The ANC is united. Mm. We have unity to bring forth, and we will all be united again.
Sure, that's what we saw in the elective conference.
Exactly.
So much unification.
I mean, there's also the fact that you can't pretend that everyone agrees. You know, I don't understand why we have to keep pushing this agenda of unity when everyone, so clearly, even within sitting in this room right now, we all disagree. There's no reason to do that. But so it's once again a whole lot of hogwash. I mean, this is just PR. The ANC is the center of power. Mm-hmm. The Ramaphosa is the leader of the ANC. So if he wants us to understand it that way, for me, I think that he's saying that Ramaphosa is going to be the decision maker. And look, a lot of the signs are pointing to that. He's going to have to really step up.
So do you think it's just a matter of time for the president to be recalled and for Cyril, who's in any case deputy president of the country, to just assume the presidency?
So it also depends on how it's done. I don't know if you've been noticing that there's calls for impeachment of the president as well, which is a hectic thing. There's three ways for a president to leave the country, right? You can either resign, which is nice, and he steps down and he moves along.
That's not going to happen with this president.
I don't think so, and a lot of people are hoping it will, but look, I don't want to jump to conclusions. This man can surprise me every day.
And he's got a lot of irons and other fires outside of being president that he can't afford to have reignited. I mean, there are things about these pending court cases that might come into effect if he's no longer serving in government.
Exactly.
So he's very careful to make these decisions based on his own personal well-being rather than that of the country.
Exactly. Look, the presidency really affords you a very good shroud of protection away from everything else. So that's the one way. The other way is that he basically gets... He basically gets a no confidence vote. How many have we had in the last few years? Yeah, so I don't even know if that's going to work. But with a no confidence vote, it's not as serious as an impeachment. With a no confidence, it's basically people in Parliament vote, or the National Assembly, they vote and they say, look, you've been great so far, but we don't think you can continue. Please, can you leave? And we've all voted. 2/3 of us say you need to go. If that happens, what happens then is that the president can then take his benefits as the president and move on. I don't know if anyone knows, but the president, for as long as you've been president, even Motlanthe keeps all the benefits.
But F.W. de Klerk still has
right? I mean, he's living the best life. I wish it was him.
Khalema, and
nice, huh?
It's so nice. Even people who've only served for a short while, like Baleg Ambete, also has those privileges. So
what are those privileges?
You get bodyguards, you get government transport, you get government housing. You get the same salary you had as president for the rest of your life.
Do you know what the best part is?
What?
Who's paying for it?
Oh, we are. Up until this moment.
That's the best
That's
part.
Even more delightful.
Yep, that's true. So, you know, there's that option, which also, once again, won't work out because I don't think it will work out. I can't state it as fact, but it hasn't worked before. Mm-hmm. So the last one is impeaching him, and this is a serious one. So if you impeach a president, it basically means that he has flouted the Constitution so badly that he cannot sit anymore.
Which the Constitutional Court has already said he has.
Right. So, and if you flout the Constitution, there is enough space for you to actually be seen as someone who needs to answer for a criminal activity. That's what flouting the Constitution means. So impeachment then means that he doesn't get anything. No benefits, no security, no nothing. And if you understand Zuma, like we understand Zuma, he's out for number one only.
Mm.
And which do you think is he going to go for? No confidence or impeachment at this stage.
So isn't he trying to bargain at this point?
Yeah.
Isn't he trying to get a good deal for himself? Because at this point, South Africans are so gutful of him that we would come to the table for a deal. And he probably knows that.
Yeah, I'm sure he does know that. And I think, yesterday there were reports that Cyril Ramaphosa and him were in close conversations. Nobody really knows what it's about. The NEC has said that, look, it is a matter of time, but we're not right now. We'll deal with this in our own time. But obviously yesterday's NEC was not the time for Zuma to be recalled, because the NEC happened and nothing happened. He was not recalled. And if these conversations continue, it's very clear that Ramaphosa is the person with the, you know, winning hand.
Mm.
If that happens, though, we have to remember that Ramaphosa has a very small window of opportunity to do this properly. He's been given a lot of a leg up and confidence from markets, from the populace, you know, because he is the leading ideology in the country right now for people in power. So they've been giving him space to make decisions, but he has a very short time to do that in. And if he screws this up, I don't really know what's going to happen to his support base and how it's going to work out.
Well, he will start to decline in influence and power, and then someone else will have to fill that vacuum.
Someone else will have to fill that
vacuum. And we know that the incumbent president of the country is not bad at filling those vacuums, not only with himself, but also with his people.
Well, that's the other thing. Ramaphosa was in KZN earlier this week because he was just trying to basically, you know, calm people down to let them know, you know, we're still here, we're united, we're still the same
ANC. And schmoozing the king.
Schmoozing the king. And this is literally about there was no KZN candidate who made it to the top six. And also, if this has to happen to Zuma, that's his major support base. So he needs to be able to gain their confidence and gain a feel that, look, we're doing this because this is what's best for the country.
So who has within the ANC, because we know that there were a lot of people who were talking big game before the elective conference, among them Fikile Mbalula, who was saying, oh, it's Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, and she's going to be the first woman, and I'm so excited about this. You know, all that kind of, I'm backing my candidate stuff. And then he very quickly went quiet, and now he almost seems to be, he's wearing Cyril Ramaphosa's shirts, he's making a lot of noise for Cyril. He's turned his tail and changed direction very quickly. Who else has done that?
Pretty much everyone in the ANC. Remember in the very good voice of Baleka Mbete, unity, unity, you know, that's literally what it's about. At the end of the day, you don't have an option. If your horse doesn't win, you have to move on. And you're the Minister of Police, Fikile Mbalula. You want to stay in power. You need to make sure you toe the line. Otherwise, you're out. Because once Cyril becomes president of the country, which it probably will happen, you're out if you're not towing the line. He has, and I don't think Ramaphosa is going to risk his name for the sake of a few people who want to bring it down. He has too much to prove as a person. You know, President Cupcake has a lot to do.
President Cupcake.
I mean, I want to put that out there because we keep forgetting that this person was lying.
Yeah.
You know, we pretend that the only thing that matters is the fact that he is a market pleaser, but that's not the only point. The fact is that this man was having an affair with somebody else. He hurt other women, and there's a problem here. If we only see corruption as one side of it, which is only money. And let's be honest here, Zuma has done more than one thing here. He has not only done money problems, he's also, you know, being accused of rape, which he was acquitted of. I have to say that.
Yeah, you have to add that.
I have to say that.
But, but there's a track record of the way he feels about women and the way he treats women and what he thinks of women.
There's also accusations of, you know, Ramaphosa having beaten his wife. I don't know if that's true. There's no way for me to prove that. But there's a lot of things here at stake, and we have to remember that corruption doesn't just start with money. It's not about money changing its hands. It starts with lies. It starts with, you know, a whole lot of bull that comes with it.
So the president also instituted the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture this week, which was something Thuli Madonsela told him to do like 3 years ago.
Right.
And then he fired her. She was removed from office, and then eventually Busisiwe Mgwebane came in, and Busisiwe Mgwebane did not make a move in this direction at all. He's now suddenly decided it's time, and he's even appointed the Deputy Chief Justice to head the commission.
Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting because, remember, he's got an appeal in the courts right now over that document from Thuli Madonsela, where he says, we don't want these recommendations, I need someone to review this. And there's been a lot of back and forth about whether, in institution the inquiry and him having this appeal, did he flout the constitution? There's a lot of back and forth and lots of different perspectives on it. And look, Pierre de Force says that, look, there's different ways to look at it. He can say, yes, he did flout the constitution, but also at the same time, he has too much power to be able to decide these things. So because it's been decided, i.e. who will head it up, how it's going to work, happen much later, it may be seen as a little bit more, there's a little bit more space for him to be able to do this. The inquiry, we also have to take with the sincerity it's given to us with. I mean, if you look at any other commission, Marikana Commission, does anyone remember any of the outcomes and any of the things that happened out of there?
No.
Right. So the biggest commission that we might remember some outcomes of is the TRC, right? After that, I mean, life is many still continuing. These things are long, they're drawn
and
out.
And they're very boring. It's a lot of detail.
It's lots of legalese, you know. It's things that we don't really have the time and power to be able to understand with our busy lives. So this is also going to take a long time, A, and B, the effectiveness of it is really the most important thing for me. Is this really going to do much? And I think with the kind of pressure that's been put on this topic particularly, we might see something a little bit different than what happened, for instance, at Marikana.
Well, there's a lot riding on it, not just the president and those implicated in state capture's future, but the future of this country in terms of us being a rule of law democracy.
I mean, also at the end of the day, how long is this going to take? So is this really going to affect the fact that he's being recalled, impeached, or no confidence or anything? First, Parliament has to set the rules for how a president can be impeached. That hasn't even been done yet. So the beginning stages, first they need to go back to every instance in which a president can be deemed to have flouted the constitution. And one of the things that other political parties have been saying, especially the DA, is that we need to draft these rules not for a particular president, but for all presidents. So should this happen again, there's ease with which and a fast pace at which this can happen.
Yeah, because we need to have a better system for getting rid of someone who's incompetent. Right. That's what we've learned from Jacob Zuma. This constitution was written for Thabo Mbeki and Nelson Mandela and those kind of reasonable people. Mm. It wasn't written for a kleptocratic, beholden state capture agent.
Well, that's assuming any of them were any more rational than he is.
Well, I think the record will show, but I mean, historically, I don't think President Jacob Zuma is going to be compared favorably with those two.
I doubt it.
Okay, let's just talk for a second about something nobody cares about anymore because we have a short attention span and we all forget very quickly. Where is poor NDZ and what is she doing? Do you know?
Well, she's part of the NEC, so...
Yeah, but does she have... Because she quit the AU job to do this. It was going to be a big thing. I mean, what has she been doing?
So the NEC basically is part of the decision-making body of the ANC.
So she was there yesterday.
She was there yesterday, and at the moment...
At the back, you're like helping yourself to some porridge. I mean, like, what was going on there? What a sad ending to her political ambition.
It really is a sad ending because she...
Like when Hillary Clinton was spotted in the woods. After the 2016.
Oh. I mean, the thing is that this always happens to women. And I'm sorry, I have to be honest.
To men. Who ever heard of Michael Dukakis after he lost in the 1980s?
I mean, but how big? Well, there we go. 19 what again?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What happened to, who mentions Mitt Romney anymore?
I mean, we still know kind of what he's doing a little bit.
Come on.
But, I mean, the thing is, what's sad about it is that these are two women, particularly NDZ, who has a lot to offer. I mean, she really has a lot to offer. She transformed Home Affairs when she was the minister of it.
Didn't her director general do most of that?
But under her command. And
and I know that women don't get the credit that they deserve when they do things, and men always get the credit and women get the blame. I know that. We have a bias in society. But Home Affairs, it did start to come right under her. When she was Minister of Health, apart from Serafina, she did change tobacco legislation. A lot of people very happy about that, and maybe we've reaped a lot of rewards from that too. But in that period at the AU, she got so little done. There was huge frustration around her. There was more division between Francophone and Anglophone Africa than there's almost ever been. And there was just such jockeying for power that it made it very difficult for her to say, this is my track record.
Mm.
I think that might have been one of the problems with her ambitions for being president of this country. She didn't have a lot to show for her time at the AU.
I mean, that's the thing. If you don't have solid track record like Cyril Ramaphosa, is that exactly like you're saying, then you don't have much. The problem is that it also depends on your personality. So NDZ is a different kind of personality who does things differently, who sees the world differently. Ramaphosa is also very different, more ostentatious, much more in your face. And, you know, we could really pretend that that's a gender thing. But, I mean, it could be either. It's neither here nor there. But her as a leader, she has a lot of chops and things to offer. And I think this is in the NEC might be where we could see it. And if you're more of an insider, more than I am at the moment, you might be able to see those different parts of her. But obviously now the ANC has a lot to worry about. And I think they're going to need all the hands they have to make the right decisions and at the right time. For the most important thing now for the ANC is timing. They cannot even think about what's going to happen to any other person within the ANC until this pending issue.
The person at the top determines how everything looks under them, right?
Basically. And so we have to really wait for Ramaphosa. Everything is hinging on Ramaphosa at this point. He has to do something or, you know, it's really going to be bad for the ANC. They're going to lose even more than they've lost before.
Hmm. All right. What's going to happen to most of these ministers if let's say, Jacob Zuma is recalled and Cyril does become the president? Mm. And in that role, he's then reshuffling perhaps a few of the posts, which he likely will do, because he has, as you say, this window of opportunity to act. And if he doesn't use it, he doesn't spend that political capital. It goes. Do you think there are certain people whose heads are on the chopping block immediately?
Okay, so with an impeachment, Ramaphosa does not automatically become the president. The Speaker of Parliament then becomes the president. So the National Assembly will then rule, they will vote, and you know, you need a 2/3 majority on whether this will happen. Once it happens, the Speaker gets into power. They then need to decide who's going to be president after that, who should, you know, ultimately be Ramaphosa. Again, they will have to vote on that. Mm-hmm. If there's no vote outcome, like not enough of a majority, they will then have to wait 30 days to get a secret ballot. They have 30 days to do this. They have to do a secret ballot if there's more than two candidates, and then they vote on them. Within 30 days, that's not done. The whole cabinet is dissolved. That's all the ministers are gone. Hmm. And we have to do a whole new election with the public.
Wow, that is so much admin.
Admin. We're like on the precipice. We're basically, you know.
We can handle a little bit of admin.
Yeah, right, admin we can deal with. I think
admin. Like, I do not want to go and vote.
I am not going to just register and do my thumb. No, that's the last thing we need to worry about. I mean, look, we've seen how the markets can really determine what we do by just the president sneezing. So if we decide that within 30 days, we don't know what the... Can I swear?
Yeah, you can.
Oh,
you can.
Great. Oh, my God. You should have told me this earlier. We don't know what the fuck is going on.
You should have been like letting loose from the get-go.
Yeah. Yeah, if we don't know what's going on, then we basically are fucked. And, you know, we've got those 30 days. And we are then going to become the news that you see. You know, everyday news of other countries where they're just like, oh, my God, there's no president. What the fuck is going on? Nobody knows where to turn. That's basically what's going to happen. So we actually, this is a very serious time. And I don't think that people appreciate just how complicated it is to impeach a president. It's not as easy as just, okay, once you're out, Ramaphosa's in, let's keep it moving. It seems that way because we seem to understand or we think we know who's going to like get in there. But if anything, the ANC race has taught us that surely this country is not simple.
And this happened in Brazil.
This happened in Brazil.
Right. So there's a template there to see what can evolve after this. I mean, it's huge political instability in the short term. But in the long term, it allows people to really be very particular about what sort of government they want after that.
Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm curious also about who the big winners will be in a Cyril dispensation. Like, who are the people who are going to suddenly come out of the shadows and who've been supporting him all along? We know about the obvious members of the top six and those kinds of positions, but we don't know who...
In government.
We don't know who Cyril would appoint to ministerial positions, because it's not like he had a distinct list going into this of who he'd like to appoint into certain positions.
I think we must also look at the kind of ideologies that certain ministers have forwarded. So, you know, people have been saying that the finance minister, for instance, has more of an NDZ kind of look and feel, should I say.
Right.
But so I think that would be one of the ministries that we really should look out for. There might be a big change there, because Cyril, just yesterday, it was announced that he's actually heading the delegation from South Africa to the IMF. And that is a very big thing, because the last time we went overseas, what happened? A minister was called back and basically fired.
Pravin.
So he needs to go and fix all these issues, plug all the holes, make sure everything's patched
up. You know who was so quiet during this whole elective process at the ANC's elective conference at NASREC, and for a month or two before that and for a month since then, is Malusi Gigaba, our finance minister. Dead quiet. Do you think he's biding his time, trying to find a way to make himself relevant to the incoming possibilities, or do you think that he's doing what's right for the economy and keeping quiet, because that's also necessary?
Yeah, look, he is the Minister of Finance, so he needs to be quiet for a bit. He's not really, it doesn't have much opportunity to really speak out. But at the end of the day, he has never really been a very outspoken person. He's kind of behind the scenes, and this is now post ANC Youth League. But as a finance minister, yeah, he kind of needs to just bide his time and then wait until he gets told. And the ANC has a culture of this. Remember, people don't speak until people tell them to speak. One of the biggest problems in the ANC is that Zuma just goes and says things without speaking to anybody else. So this is a huge culture thing where people don't talk out of turn, basically.
All right, I've got to squeeze one more thing in. We're doing the Burning Platform this morning. It's brought to you by Nando's. Deshni Subramani's here, and she's sharing some of her insights into what's been going on over the last couple of days. So if you have some thoughts on that, you can always get hold of us on 0797482090 on the WhatsApp, or you can call us on 0861555189. I'm curious about what's going on with Patricia de Lille. She's come out guns blazing. The DA leadership, have they got their heads up their backsides? Because it seems to me that what this is a very much coordinated takedown of Patricia de Lille. There's this manufactured story. She says she's going to sue the pants off the people who started it because there's no substance to it at all. She's come out with some fighting words this week. I can't help but side with her. I can't help but think, what are Musi Maimane and Van Damme, what's her name?
Pumzile
Van Damme, and all of those other people in the DAs, what do they call it? Federal Council.
Which is essentially its NEC.
Why doesn't one of them stand up for her or say to whoever it is that's going at her, listen, back the hell down. She's got a job to do as mayor. These unsubstantiated charges. Why have we suspended her in the first place? Or are they in on it?
So, okay, this is party politics. With the ANC, just to make a comparison quickly, we have a lot more access to them because we historically have. There's always been more to understand in the ruling party than there has been with opposition politics. Mm-hmm. And look, generally as a media, I don't think that we're very good at opposition politics. We don't really look at the opposition parties the way we do with the ruling party. So that's really a setback from our side, where we're kind of seeing these things as if it came out of nowhere. But actually, these things have been brewing for a while. Also included in that is, remember, this has been going for a long time. Remember when Patricia de Lille quit to be more mayor than she's ever been? yeah, she was like, you know, quitting all party stuff. And she's like, nope, this is my job. So you could see from then that there's been an issue. There's been problems. Things are happening that we don't know about. And right now, within that party, I think they are too busy focusing out, like, what is the word when? Oh my God!
Go on.
Really, is like my words are gone.
Go on.
You've done
fine so far.
Okay. So far, where, you know, in public, they really have a lot of the national politic to worry about right now. Mm. They're really trying to push themselves and establish themselves, or not establish themselves because they have been established, but they really have to push themselves as an opposition party to follow, because so far the EFF is kind of being the leader in terms of what an impeachment is. I mean, it's the EFF who said, look, we need to get former jurists to help us with this draft regulations. We need to do this. We need to do that. The IFP has been in the middle of it. So the DA really has a lot of national politics to focus on. There's not that much room to discuss internal politics. And do we even know much about the internal politics? Does the DA also not have a culture of not speaking about internal things? When Zilla was fired, how much did we know about that? Not really that much. We kind of had to speculate. Is there a problem? Isn't there a problem? With the whole black caucus of the DA, in inverted commas, did we know what's actually going on? And do we even know now what's happening with them? We don't.
So, but, I mean, when you're busy trying to clean up your house, do you want to show everybody the dirt that's coming out?
Exactly.
But Patricia de Lille seems like the wrong person to gun for if you're trying to show that you're cleaning house or you're trying to, because she has a lot of people's support. She hasn't done a bad job as mayor.
Mm.
She's very honest. She's very forthright. Her political history is one of someone who is interested in helping the poor, and she's keen to get things going. She's a worker. She gets stuck in. It does seem to me like it was a miscalculation by whoever decided she's the one we're going to go for here to show that we're, I don't know, cleaning house, as Mubs put it.
Mm. I mean, I don't even think they intended to show it that way. I think I don't think that they know that there's very little eyes, very few eyes on them right now. Yeah. And I think that they didn't intend to make it seem as if they're cleaning house. But what I do agree with you on is, was that the right person to target in the first place? I don't really know, to be honest, enough. I'm one of the people responsible for not knowing enough about opposition politics.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about the internal dynamics of the DA to be able to understand why that was the person. But in Cape Town, we've got a series of issues. There's a whole lot of problems. We've got gang violence.
Right.
We have got water issues. And the water issues seem to be historical. I don't want to blame it on her. And also the gang issues. But we've got things that haven't been tackled properly. We've got things where we decide that soldiers is the way to respond, you know, gang, which is ridiculous.
And even this water crisis, like you're going into people's private property and like shutting down their water. It's very draconian.
Look, it's a little bit ridiculous, but they also really need to understand this is urgent. This is not tomorrow or just now or now. This is now, like now. Like the South African now?
Like the South African now.
And
yeah.
Do you
really
want, if you're in a crisis situation like Cape Town, do you really want your mayor distracted with crap over her renovation of her house for like a couple of hundred thousand, which we obviously in this country are very sensitive and primed for because of Nkandla and everything else. But she's been giving journalists access. She said, go, look around. Tell me where this money is. She's shown them her statements. She said, this is what I've paid for. It would seem to me that the burden of proof on this whole allegation about Patricia Little is on the other members of the DA who've put her in the position where she has to defend herself.
I mean, that is the position of the country too. And it seems like if she's not been given that opportunity, then we really need to ask the DA, are they acting constitutionally?
Sorry, how are Bowman Gilfillan roped into this story?
So they're the company that's been contracted. Let me just show you.
They've been contracted to investigate it? They're a law firm.
No.
Yeah, Bowman Gilfillan are lawyers. So are they coming in on behalf of the DA or on behalf of Patricia Lalonde?
They're coming in on behalf of the DA. The DA. I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So because I mean.
So they're lawyering up against Patricia.
They are, and so if they're lawyering up against their own DA person,
what a mess!
You really need to wonder about.
You would think at this point that. Just strategically, someone in the DA would be saying, guys, why are we fighting this internal battle when we've got an election next year? The ANC is broken up, and in no way can they confirm that they're unified, no matter how much Baleka screams about it, or Ace. This is an opportunity that we've got to reach for.
The thing is, why is a legal body, a legal company, asking or telling a DA member that...
They can or can't talk.
Exactly. And what they're actually facing. This should be an internal issue. This should not be a legal issue. This is already a legal problem.
Jeez.
So basically, they're really escalating and ramping up to try and intimidate her and make her seem as if, you know.
Well, just to add on to the point that you were making about how they don't like talking about their issues, the chairperson, James Self, has recently called on members within the party to refrain from public commentary because he says that they're going to deal with it internally this coming weekend.
That's hypocrisy, because whenever the ANC does that and they have closed meetings where they don't allow the press in, then the DA goes off their rocker and they say, oh, you see, the ANC with their old secret liberation movement tactics.
And they too have things where, you know, the media is not allowed to go in. It's just the way it works. These are internal issues. It's a whole political party. We can't expect that they're going to reveal everything and we must know everything. That's not the way it works. But yes, I mean, look, at the end of the day, the secrecy around it is kind of, especially given the fact that Patricia Digital has shown her statements. She has said she's done very well. This is what she's done. She's paid for this. There's no issue here. This is the problem.
Well, Deshni, somehow we've run out of time and it's... Feels like we only just started talking to you 5 minutes ago. Thank you so much for coming to see us this
morning.
You're
welcome.
And your insights have been very, very helpful, particularly the options available for getting rid of a president, which you outlined very nicely for us. So thank you for that.
Sure.
And we will check in with you again soon. Don't be a stranger.
Definitely.
Thank you. Deshni Subramani and the burning platform for this morning, which is a little bit of political insight for the week ahead, brought to you by Nando's. And for those people who are obsessing over where Justice Malala is, I spoke to him yesterday. I sent him a little update I had from one of my birdies in the ANC.
Oh.
And he replied, he said, oh, this mess that is the ANC, it just gets worse and worse and worse. In fact, his exact words, let me read them to you because it's kind of funny. He goes, it doesn't stop, does it?
Yeah.
Nope.
So he'll be with us next Thursday. Deshni, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us today.
My aunt's little ones are doing a 9-week course. And I mean, I know they're really Olic and stuff, but I just think it's kind of cruel. Because when she says sit, they sit. When she says come, they come. And now, she's teaching them tricks, like party tricks and stuff. I mean, it's exploitation. Come on, I mean, the poor dogs.
A combination meal, inspired by 7 colors, is something for everyone. Nando's, fire it up.
This is CliffCentral.com.